യോഗേന ചിത്തസ്യ പദേന വാചാം മലം ശരീരസ്യ ച വൈദ്യകേന യോപാകരോത്തം പ്രവരം മുനീനാം പതഞ്ജലിം പ്രാഞ്ജലിരാനതോസ്മി സ്തുവേ പതഞ്ജലിം വ്യാസം ശങ്കരം ച മുനിത്രയം കർത്തൃസൂത്രസ്യ ഭാഷ്യസ്യ ക്രമാത് വിവരണസ്യ ച. So, with the 41st sutra, we have partly concluded the discussion on pranayama. So now the next one is, it is for 51st sutra. Bahya abhyantara visaya akshepi chaturthaha. This is the 51st sutra, which concludes the discussion on pranayama. No, we have 52nd one. Tatakshiyati prakashavaranam. Now what happens when we get fully established in pranayama? That's a discussion. So when we get established in pranayama, the veil, the cover, or the covering, the concealing veil that covers the light of knowledge, that is, that covers the true nature of chittam, is weakened and slowly it disappears. So this is the 52nd sutra. Now, to fully understand this, we have to keep in mind some very important aspects of the teachings of the 51st one, because tataha means then. When we get fully established in the fourth or the last or fully established stage of pranayama, then what happens? Slowly, the light of knowledge, the light of our true chittam, slowly begins to appear. The veil begins to disappear slowly. Now, how does this happen? What is this veil? This veil is, you know, vrittis, desires, vasanas, samskaras, thought currents, impressions, all these, which cover the chitta, which cover the true nature of ourself. That's a covering. So that covering slowly begins to lift when we get fully established in pranayama. Now, how is this possible? So there is a statement in the commentaries that the highest pranayama, to reach the highest pranayama stage, we have to exercise a great deal of detachment or non-attachment. Thoughts will arise, old samskaras and vasanas will arise. We have to exercise the discerning mind. I am not this thought, I am not this vritti. So this you can easily understand in the light of some practical examples. I shall give the example. See, suppose a person does pranayama, and if he is fully established in non-violence, absence of greed, absence of covetousness, purity of life, all this, then still thoughts will arise, because from a purely physiological point of view, when the nervous system gets hyperactivated, when they get energized, thought currents will arise. When this system, nervous system, is in a semi-dormant state, thoughts are there, but they do not arise. They are not visible, or they cannot be experienced. So a person who has practiced yama nema and practices pranayama, which again is impossible to get fully established in without concentration, without fixing your mind on an ideal, then what happens, you know, thoughts will arise, but you will be able to exercise the wisdom, the discrimination. Well, I'm not a thought. Vrittis, impressions, thought currents will arise. I'm not a thought current. This is the main difference between a spiritual seeker who is following the right track and others. Those who are not fully established in yama and nema will immediately identify themselves with the emerging thought currents and impressions. So the covering here should be understood. What is the covering? Covering is nothing but vrittis, vasanas, samskaras, thought currents, impressions, and so on, which may come from experiences of this life or previous life. So when you identify with them, then your progress is blocked. When you succeed in detaching yourself from them through non-identification, then what happens? That experience leads to calmness and quietude. Otherwise, it leads to restlessness. That's why those of you may have read these books, you will understand. Those who do pranayama without any proper discipline, one negative symptom is disconnected thought currents, and its most visible form is endless conversation without any coherence or logical thing. They will continue talking or they will continue doing something. It is a little similar to some problems in manic problems, because a lot of energy is created. Nervous system is energized, but the nervous system should be energized only after getting fully established in the fundamental 10 disciplines, yama and nema. Otherwise, what happens? Restlessness, and then that restlessness manifesting in the form of continuous conversation without any definite subject or coherent thought or logical thinking. Now, on the other hand, if that person is fully established in yama and nema, this doesn't happen. Thoughts will arise, but the spiritual seeker will be able to counter or block these thought currents through a deterrent, you know, through a counter mechanism. Well, I am not these thoughts. I am not these impressions. These impressions, these vrittis, these vasanas, which emerge in the mind, are the characteristics of my mind, citta, or rather is the characteristics of the covering. That's why, you know, tadakshiyade prakasha avaranam. So avaranam is covering. So covering is always in the form of desires, vasanas, etc. That's why Lord Krishna says in the 6th chapter, asamsayam mahabahu mano durnigraham chalam abhyasena tu kaundeya vairagyena jagrihyade. So Lord Krishna says, mind is fickle, difficult to control. Now it can only be kept under check through dispassion, through non-attachment. But this non-attachment is possible only if one is established in yama and nema. Otherwise, one will not be able to practice non-attachment. That is why it is stated the 4th pranayama, the highest pranayama, mentioned in the 51st sutra, Bahya Abhindra Vishya Akshepi Chadurtha. It is possible only when we get fully established in non-attachment. This is an important point to be kept in mind. One great example I can give, one sign of red signal, so to speak. Many spiritual seekers, after doing meditation or prayer, spending long hours in meditation and prayer, or even after listening to lectures on spiritual topics, they want a relaxation. So they want a diversion. So immediately there is a need for them to engage in some activities which may not be directly linked to spiritual life. So you may go to a library and read some comic books, some relaxations, or play games, watching 49ers, such things. You know. So it's a complete, it's a natural characteristic which shows that there is something wrong, there is some block, some obstacle in the track. Which means we are not able to enjoy spiritual thoughts, spiritual practices, spiritual ideas. This is one sign which some commentators hinted. You know, Shankaracharya has written a famous book called Vivarana. It is Vyasa Bhashi Vivarana. It's a super commentary on Vyasa's commentary on Patanjali Yoga Sutra. This is immediately there is a tendency that you will be eager, you know, if you're sitting for meditation or contemplation. Sometimes you feel absolutely eagerness to get up and read San Francisco Chronicle, slime, just come just now. Or listen to the news, which is totally different. Nothing wrong in reading, or nothing, we can't say it's wrong to read newspapers or watch the TV. In terms of, there is nothing wrong in it. But the eagerness or the feeling of the need for a sudden distraction to move away from spiritual activity is a sign of not being fully established in yamas and niyamas, which means the covering is not vanishing. We practice, but it is not really happening as fast as it could. That's why Lord Krishna says it is mano nirdurnir manaha chala mana. Mind is fickle, it's always moving, it's always in a flux. So durnigraham, it is not easy to control, to check. Therefore, abhyasa, continuous practice. Lord Krishna makes this point with reference to Vedantic spiritual practices like meditation and also yogic practices. Now, how do you practice this? How do you continue this practice? Vairagya means non-attachment. So, one should be able to mentally detach oneself from the emerging thought currents, which may create an urge to move away from the spiritual practices, and one may have a strong desire to distract our mind into some other ordinary secular activities, which may be the opposite of spiritual practice. So that's an important point, remember. Now the idea continues in the next two sutras, which are very important in system, in the sadhana pada. So 53rd verse, dharanasu cha yogida manasaha. That is the 53rd, and the 54th is suvishaya asamprayogi chittasvarupanukaraha iva indriyanam pratyakaraha. It's a famous and very important and very crucial statement in the Patanjali system, this 54th sutra. So that needs a long discussion. The 53rd sutra says, dharanasu cha yogida manasaha. So when you get fully established in this pranayama, through constant practice and by the practice of renunciation, total non-attachment, Then what happens? Our mind becomes fit for higher concentration. And that is the sixth state. So dharana, dhyana, samadhi. So dharana is the sixth, and dhyana is seventh, samadhi is the eighth of the Ashtanga yogas. So dharana means concentration, focusing on something. The dharana is already involved in pranayama. Without some degree of success in dharana or concentration, it is impossible to practice pranayama. Because without the focus, the mind will waver, the mind will move from one ideal to another ideal. Its fickleness will be strongly felt. So the dharana that's mentioned here is this focusing on this. Now, this is not the dharana that is part of samyama. So as I mentioned, you know, there are three elements of the Ashtanga yoga which are clubbed together. It's called samyama. Dharana, dhyana, samadhi. Dharana means concentration for a long time. Dhyana means getting established in a long concentration. Samadhi is the highest state. Of course, the result of dhyana. So in the 53rd sutra, there is a reference to dhyana. Sorry, dharana, that is concentration. That concentration is the beginning of the real dharana, which takes you to dhyana and eventually to samadhi. So before we take up dharana, there is a discussion and a definition of pratyahara. That's why the 54th sutra is important. As I read 54th sutra, Swasvishaya asamprayoge chitta surupanukaraha iva indriyanam pratyakaraha. The whole topic is this. Can we connect and disconnect our mind and different objects, senses, etc.? Is it really possible? That's the question. So disconnecting effecting a disconnection between mind, senses and object, that is the real meaning of pratyahara. So the translation is this. When the sense organs, which normally come into contact with different objects, for example, eye, is a sense organ, is a sense of perception. It comes in contact with the visual objects. Ears, they come in contact with the audio objects. And sense of touch, we come to know of different things by touch, smell, taste, and so on. So when the sense organs do not really connect with their respective objects, that means you should be able to see without watching. You should be able to hear without listening. The sense organs, from a very physical perspective, may be contacting different objects. The eyes may be focused on a visual object, but one should be able to avoid seeing the object. In the sense, the object should not create a modification in the mind. You may be hearing, but you're not listening. There'll be perfume everywhere, but our mind is not going towards the objects we produce this perfume. So the sense of smell is connecting with that object, with the smell, perfume. But the mind is not going towards that. Is it possible? Is it possible to disconnect mind, senses and objects of the senses? It should be possible, then only it becomes pratyahara. Means withdrawing our mind from sense objects by withdrawing the senses of perception from their objects. So when the sense organs do not objectify the objects, or do not come in contact with their objects, then what happens? These sense organs will follow the dictates of the mind. Otherwise, the sense organs do not listen to the dictates of the mind. Because what happens? The sense organs take the form of the mind. That's why when we see an object, our mind for the time being takes the form of that object. But a yogi can see, rather, maybe looking at an object without seeing, maybe hearing in a physical sense without listening. This is the meaning of the sutra. Then it is called pratyahara. Now, this can be given, this can be explained in the help of some examples. We normally do that. Suppose we are extremely interested in something, children watching games and things, anything. You're really interested. At that time, a voice from the street will not distract you, because the mind is focused on that. Maybe the sound waves and ears connect, but we don't listen. The eyes may be seeing things, but we may not be watching it. There's no conscious effort to understand or cognize or perceive anything with the help of the sense of eyes, sense of vision. So this we normally do when we are extremely interested in certain things. But then, when we try to divert this natural faculty of the mind to spiritual ideas, then it is not easy. It is easy for us to focus on a visual thing and forget everything else, and not to hear many things, not to listen to anything. Or it's easy for us to listen to a music that we like and not seeing anything, because our mind is fully focused on that. Can we do that in spiritual life? So yogi exercises his training and practice to divert this faculty to spiritual concentration. But it is not easy. So there is a famous verse in the Vedantic text of Shankaracharya that's given as an example of the importance of pratyahara. The verse is this: Shabdadibhi panjabhireva pancha panjatta mapussa gunena beddhaha kuranga madanga padanga meenaha bhrunga nara panjabhiranjidakim. This is the verse in the Vega Chudamani. The meaning is this. Come 78 verse perhaps. Examples are taken from nature. Now, there are different objects: deer, elephant, moth, fish, and black bee. All these are different objects. Deer, you know, they're obsessed with sound, because in ancient days the hunters used to play a flute or some instrument to drag them away from the caves or bushes in which they may be hiding. And when they come out listening to this music, they'll be shot with an arrow, they'll be killed. So deer is given as an example of an animal that meets its end because of its attraction for the audio, for the substance, means for the shabda, means sound. It is drawn out of the cave by the sound. So when he hears this music, It cannot control it. It comes out of the bush and it is killed. Then elephant, the second animal, elephant, madanga means. Elephants move in large herds. They touch each other to protect themselves. So frequently when they fall in a pit, they fall together. So the sense of touch becomes the cause of their death. And they will be caught and maybe enslaved. Then moth, tiny creatures that emerge during rainy season. So when they see a visual object, a flame, brilliant object, they are drawn towards it and they are killed. Then fish, it is attracted by the sense of taste and it eats the bait and it's killed. And then black bee, it goes about collecting honey from flowers and then they are caught by some other animals and killed. Now, Shankaracharya asked the question, and that is the most crucial part of this verse. Narapanjabhiranchitakim. What about human beings? Each of these animals are members of the animal kingdom. Meets their death because they are trapped by one of the sense organs. Now human beings are simultaneously being dragged to different sense objects. All the five senses of perception drag our mind to different objects. So what happens when we see something, we may also be hearing. When we are hearing, we may also be seeing. Your thoughts also will make us see things mentally from memory. So the point is, all these sense organs drag the mind towards their different sense objects. Now, a yogi should be able to stop these sense organs from coming in contact with their respective objects. And then he will be able to establish this connection between mind, senses and objects. This is called pratyahara. This pratyahara in its various aspects are being explained by different commentators. Very striking examples are given here. So I want to make this discussion a bit of an academic discussion, not a very informal, simple presentation of yoga as such. So a few important commentators, because of the importance of this sutra, have elaborately explained this method of establishing what we call a disconnection between mind, senses and sense objects. The first commentator is, the author of Maniprabha. He's called Ramananda Saraswati. So he says, Indriyani Vishayebhya Pridilomena Arhiyande Asmin Iti. How do we establish this pratyahara? How do we prevent the sense organs from dragging our mind to different objects? The sense organs get connected to their respective sense objects. As eyes get connected with the visual objects, ears get connected with audio objects and so on. And when this connection happens, mind also is dragged towards those objects. Mind takes the form of that object. That's why, according to yoga philosophy, when we see an object, what happens? An external stimuli just causes the particular form to emerge in the mind. Already these objects are there in our mind. An external phenomenon, one form or other, causes the particular form to emerge in the mind. This is one theory which we'll discuss on a later occasion. So the process by which the sense organs are made to move in the opposite direction from the sense objects, in which the senses behave in the same way as the mind, is pratyahara. So normally, you know, the senses drag the mind to its objects. But in this case, what happens? The sense organs do not move in the direction of sense organs do not move in the direction of sense objects. The sense organs move in the direction of the mind. So they follow the track of the mind. When they follow the track of the mind, then what happens? You are no more dragged into sense objects. I shall explain it further. So you look here. Here is Ramananda Saraswati says in his Maniprabha commentary. Indriyani vishebhyaka pradilomena arhiyade arhiyande asminiti chittasya surupanukaraka. Indriyani vishebhya pradilomena arhiyande asminiti. The point is this. The process, the method by which the sense organs are made to move in the opposite direction from the sense objects, or rather in the direction of the mind, this is pratyahara. Normally what happens? The sense organs, eyes move towards visual objects, ears move towards audio objects, the sense of smell move towards the place or the object from which the smell is coming, or the sense of touch moves towards the object that we are touching, and so on. But in this connection, what happened? The sense organs do not move towards sense objects. Sense organs move towards the mind itself. So, this withdrawing of the sense objects away from the withdrawing of the sense organs away from sense objects is pratyahara. Remember, withdrawing of the sense organs from sense objects is pratyahara. This should be understood clearly. This is pradilomiana, means the opposite direction. Sense organs normally move towards sense objects. A person who gets established in pratyahara succeeds in making the sense organs move in the direction of the mind and not in the direction of the sense objects. So, once you achieve this, what happens? Your sense organs cooperate with the mind. If sense organs are drawn towards sense objects, then sense organs do not cooperate with the mind. They move against the mind. But when the sense organs do not move in the direction of sense objects, what happens? Then they move towards the direction of the mind. That is called pratyahara. Then, of course, this is one important view. Once you achieve this, you will be able to exercise your complete mental concentration on whatever you are doing. And then, whatever you have done, if you have read something, it sticks with the mind. Memory is always a result of this yogic concentration. Real memory I'm not talking about rote memorization, remember. Rote memorization doesn't help you to quote when you need it. The real memorization in philosophical studies is practiced in Vedantic studies in India. Is not just rote memorization. Small children used to memorize these verses, Vedas for example, when they are very young. But when you grow up, you will not be able to produce those verses in appropriate context if you have just memorized in a mechanical way, which is called rote memorization. So your mind goes through ideas, And then those ideas will take your mind to the corresponding verses or statements. And then you are able to remember those statements, the Vedas, Upanishad. That's the technique of memorization practiced in higher philosophical learning in ancient India. It is not just rote memorization alone. Rote memorization doesn't give much exercise to your brain. It is possible for children when they are young. Because children listen to certain musical movement of these consonants and vowels and verses, and they automatically memorize, which even, they say, even parrots do. But real memorization is possible when first your mind goes to the ideas, and then ideas connect you with the corresponding statements in the text, so you are able to memorize, remember. That's a real memorization. Why is this possible? When you listen to an idea, when you read a text, when you read a statement, first of all, your eyes are focused on the statement if you are reading, or if you are listening as they used to do in ancient India. Your mind is fully focused on the sounds coming from the teacher. So they are registered intensely in the mind with their ideas. So you are able to reproduce the idea again and again. So this kind of pratyahara is very helpful even in the life of students, researchers and others. It helps you to develop higher faculties of mind and intellect. Then according to Vyasa, is another commentator. He is also is a great author of the yoga tradition. He also gives a very interesting description of what pratyahara means. What happens, you know, when mind is completely free from any, when mind is completely detached from vrittis, vasanas and samskaras, when it is calm, then what happens? The senses, sense organs, senses of perception, they also cease their functions. Then what happens? You don't have to apply any special mechanism for withdrawing the senses from sense objects. The senses naturally suspend their operation of dragging the mind towards different sense objects. As I said earlier, in the case of deer, it is caught because of it is drawn towards the sound, the music being played by the hunter, so it comes out of the bush and it is shot by an arrow and is killed. Because the deer listens to the sound, so its mind is also dragged towards the place where the sound is coming to the hunters and the hunter kills it. So this happens to all human beings also. So in the case of a spiritual seeker who practices pratyahara, what happens? The senses suspend their natural operations of dragging the mind to a sense objects. I mean, senses are completely under your control. So, susya visaya asamprayoga chitta surupanukaraha. Iva iti chitta nirodhe chittavat niruddhani indriyani sa idendriya jayavat upayantram apekshade yatha madhukara rajyam makshiga utpadantam anupadanti nivishamanam anunivashante tatha indriyani chitta nirodhe niruddhani ityesha pratyakaraha. So an example is given from a very interesting phenomenon in nature. You know, just as the bees follow the course of the queen bee, when the queen bee rests, other bees also suspend their functions. When the queen bee is active, other bees also become active. Similarly, when the mind is under control, The senses stop dragging the mind towards sense objects. Senses are completely under the control of the mind. In other words, there are only two types of persons in the world. One group, the majority, their senses are controlling the mind. So we don't feel peace of mind. We feel anxiety. Very often non-existent imaginary problems also taunt the mind, torment the mind, because the mind is always linked to some sense objects related to imaginary experiences, problems, or some events in the past. So mind is flowing towards different experiences through sense organs. But a yogi or spiritual seeker, his first step should be to create a disconnect, to break the link that connects the sense objects and sense organs. Sense objects should be treated as objects, and sense organs and mind together should act as subject, witnessing sense objects. So there may be any number of sense objects trying to create impressions, vrittis and vasanas in the mind. But a person trying to practice pratyahara can always exercise his spiritual wisdom. These vrittis, these impressions, vasanas are emerging in the mind. But I have got a spiritual dimension to my personality. I am different from these sense objects. And also these sense, these impressions created by the emergence of sense objects. So this detachment or non-attachment is very crucial in the practice of pratyahara. So this is an important point, remember. Now we can have discussion. If we do not have doubts, we'll continue, because the subject of pratyahara is discussed very elaborately in normal yoga sutra classes. It is one of the most difficult points to understand in the yoga psychology. So if you have got doubts, we'll discuss. Otherwise, we'll continue the classes.
Swami Vivekananda makes a comment, what you're speaking about. The form is not, say you see a book. The form is not in the book. It is in the mind.
Yes.
Something is outside which calls that form up.
Yes.
That seems somewhat like a circular argument in a sense.
So
because if the form is in the mind originally, somehow it must have been outside to be formed within.
Yeah.
Could you explain that?
Yeah, the point is, you know, when an external form manifests, a corresponding form is created in the citta. The citta takes the corresponding form. But the stimuli should come from the external world. So Swamiji says everything is the citta. Chitta, by its very nature, is pure light. But all these impressions, all the vrittis, vasanas and samskaras corresponding to different objective phenomena are covering this. So when an external object emerges, if we are not focused on yoga, if we are not fully established in pratyahara, immediately the chitta takes that form. And that form then conceals the original citta. That's why, you know, in the earlier sutra, the statement is there, you know, tadakshiyati prakasha avaranam. Prakasha means light of the citta. The true nature of citta is covered, concealed by this avaranam, concealment, veil. What is the veil? All these impressions, vasanas, vrittis and samskaras that emerge in the citta. of a person who is not well established in pratyahara. Why? How does this happen? The mind is dragged towards this visual or audio, different kinds of objects, sense objects, through the senses. The senses of perception drag the mind towards sense objects. Then the form of the object will be collected in the citta. So they constitute this avarana, means concealment. So without the citta cooperating, you cannot really see anything. That's why in the highest spiritual sense, you won't see things one different from the other. When Swamiji had his first Advaitic experience, when Sri Ramakrishna touched him, you know what happens? First thing that happened, all the objects in that room started rotating and they vanished. Their different forms completely vanished. So one after another, finally they got merged in one supreme light. When he got back to his normal state, what happens, you know? The mind, the citta again re-emerged, and all these various objective phenomenal universe re-emerged. So in that, the highest samadhi state, where the citta has reached its true sarupa state, means when the citta is completely free from all avarana, this means prakasha avarana, means all concealing impressions and vasanas, vrittis, that citta is non-different from Atman itself. That's our real state. So, it's like a lake, you know. When you remove all the dirt and filth from the lake, you can see the bottom. So, the bottom, which is clearly visible in the lake where water is very loose, very, very clean, so you can look at the whole thing as one unit. The rock bottom, the water, the whole lake phenomenon appears to be one unit. On the other hand, when there is a lot of filth and dirt, like, you know, different impressions, vasanas, vrittis and samskaras, then you can't see the rock bottom. So you can understand this phenomenon in the light of Swamiji's own experience. When Sri Ramakrishna touched him, what happens, you know, prakasha avaranam, all these vanished, which a yogi reaches through pratyahara, dharana, dhyana and samadhi. That experience Swamiji got by the grace of Sri Ramakrishna, who gave him that experience through one touch. So, Swamiji's own description you can read. First, all these vanished. Visual objects vanished. Multiplicity vanished. Duality vanished. Finally, everything became one with the supreme light, which is all pervading. That's what happens. The real citta, minus all impressions and vrittis and vasanas and veils, concealment, is Atman itself. This idea.
So, Swami, you are describing two diametrically opposed situations. One where I see the object that is illumined by the light, and in the other situation, I only see the light. But now, there must be a path from one situation where I see the objects to the other. I mean, as I conceptualize the mind, I have to have something inside the mind that I've cultivated to focus on so that I don't see those objects outside. Well, so I'm asking about the path.
You know, here, of course, the word used in this sutra is cittam. The cittam really is a bit different from what we mean by the word mind in psychology. So, that cittam is that's why often it is translated as mind stuff to make it distinct and different from what we mean by the word mind in psychology. So, once your senses fully in tune with your mind, then those senses really become one with the mind. They move in the same direction. But there is no disparity, no difference in their functions. At that stage, your chittam, here of course for the word chittam I'm using the word mind for want of better words. At that time the chittam is one with your true self. It becomes an alien object, something different from its true nature, only when it is identified or linked to all these vrittis, vasanas, samskaras, which are related to different sense objects. So yogi is trying to change the direction of the senses from external to internal. The senses, instead of moving towards different sense objects, start moving towards the mind itself. When they move in the direction of the mind, then they become one with the mind. They become enemies of the mind, distractions for the mind, when they move to the external objects. That's why the Ramananda Saraswati, one of the commentators, says the senses start moving in the opposite direction. Opposite to what? Opposite to their normal track, normal path. So that's why Ramananda Saraswati's interpretation is Indriyani Indriyebhi Pradilomyena Ahiyan. That means the senses, they are not moving towards Indriyarthas, mean towards different objects, sense objects. Rather, they are moving away from the sense objects. They are moving towards the mind. When they move towards the mind, there is no distraction. Distraction comes only when the sense organs move towards different sense objects. Because plurality, multiplicity, distraction is always linked to the external sensory world, sense objects. When the sense organs move away from the sense objects towards the mind, then there is no plurality, no multiplicity. So that's why, and how does this really happen in our real life? So the technique is this non-attachment. So we say asamprayoga. Asamprayoga means no contact. How does this happen? Suppose you are looking at something. Your eyes are focused on something. Normally this happens when you're watching a very interesting movie in a theater. You don't, for 3 hours, you don't think of anything. It's really happening actually. The audio and visual functions are fully focused on the screen and also the sound system for 3 hours. Now, what a yogi is trying to do is to spiritually divert attention of the sense organs away from the sense objects, but towards the mind itself. The very fact that we are able to see something and forget everything else in normal life shows that it is possible. But the natural habit of the sense organs is to move towards external objects. This is a natural habit. There is no effort needed for you to see something and think of it. But how to see something and not watch it? How to hear something and not listen to it? How to create a block between the sense objects and sense organ? Between the eyes and also the thing that you are looking at with the eyes. How is it possible? You may be seeing it, but I'm not that. This is not the thing I'm looking for. So you may be seeing it. That's why in the Patanjali system, there is a definition, the higher commentaries, that is this, Andardrishti Bhagadhyanam. It means Andardrishti Bhagadhyanam is a state of highest Pratyakara. Now, Bhaga, this birds feeding on the fish in the seas, you know, they'll be watching for any movement on the water level. So if there is a movement, they'll simply pounce upon it and eat the fish. That'd be very watchful, very full concentration. If you go to bay, you find these birds will be pelicans, and they'll be very watchful for watching any movement in the water surface. If there's a movement, it means a fish is coming to surface. So they'll pounce upon it and eat it. So the point is, how with what concentration they're watching at the water surface. What a yogi does, antardrishti. His drishti, he's looking towards his own inner chamber. Anta means within. Within. He is looking within, which means he is not really looking, he is concentrating, he is meditating. You cannot see within, you cannot watch within. Look, seeing within means concentration. But then his eyes are opened. So you feel his eyes are really as if concentrated on something. But that concentration is not an external object as in the case of these pelicans and birds. So eyes become completely, eyes lose their natural tendency of blinking when you are concentrating on something very deeply, very intensely. Eyes start moving. Sorry, eyes stop moving. Eyes will stop blinking when you are intensely concentrating on something within you. That's sign of a yogi. Pratyahara means antadrishti. Drishti is anta, means within. Looking towards his own inner chamber, the reality, the Atman, within.
Inner reality.
So, but then Bhagat, but that's why eyes are not blinking. Yes, the pelican, you watch the whole thing, baka means the bird. Just be very careful, the slightest movement of the water surface, the fish may emerge and it may disappear. So it should watch it to bounce and eat it. That's why that concentration is a very interesting discussion mentioned here. So that's a sign of a yogi. So when the sense organs do not drag your mind to sense objects, and when the sense organs move in the opposite direction towards your own mind, it is pratyahara. When the sense organs drag the mind to a sense object, it is called distraction. The opposite of pratyahara. That's idea. Any more discussion?
So, I think first of all, this is the most difficult topic
we'll
to understand.
We'll continue this discussion. This sutra is one of the most difficult, really, to understand. That's why commentators are they're very elaborate in their commentaries.
Right. So, my question is to try to find a balance in between these two extremes. So the first one is the one that you mentioned is, you know, the ideal state, which is the final state, the samadhi state, where, you know, our chittam sees everything as light, the advaita nature, where nothing is in the principle of duality, where we are conscious of everything around us. And the other extreme is, you know, the focusing on sense objects, right? Which is the most basic nature, the natural man. So where is the balance then for, you know, someone like us, who are trying to get away from sense objects, but obviously are nowhere near the state where, you know, where we see everything. I guess that's the question. Yeah. And in the second example, the last example that you gave us, the pelican. So when he's focusing on his prey, looking at the water for the fish, is it not an example of a sense object?
I'll come to that. Okay. Now, the first question. You know, when you listen to these discussions, when you read these books, you get a higher idea of human mind, the faculties of human mind and human life and higher ideals in human life. So in our own life, when we make it a habit to read these books and when we become familiar with these ideas, we will have a higher ideal in life, not necessarily samadhi. It gives you a culture. So all people who read the yoga, Patanjali yoga system should enter the samadhi, nothing less than that. That's not the goal. That's a yoga psychology, yoga philosophy has become very popular because this gives you an insight into some of the higher aspects of mental life, how our mind functions. For example, in the day-to-day activities, obligations and responsibilities, if you're familiar with these ideas, you can always put a check to your own mind when it goes very low, when it is dragged into so much of the opposite of spiritual things. So it gives you an idea of moderation, a spiritual culture. So we naturally get a higher ideal of our mental life. Because, sense objects are not the only things that we must strive for. There are higher, bigger things in life. So human mind is such a wonderful instrument. It can be used to strike a balance between going to the extreme asceticism or going extreme worldly sensuality. Many of the great Vedic Patanjali Yoga teachers, they have given this example. So reading, becoming familiar with these ideas will give us a very high idea of life. We may not be immediately reaching it. It may not be within our reach immediately. But a vision of some of the higher faculties of human mind, human personality, and the fact that we have a higher dimension to our personality that goes beyond the physical and mental, that itself exerts a great influence in our attitudes, life. Sometimes when the mind goes down very much, you know, because the world of sensuality, sometimes some minor drawbacks in sensory, worldly life, professional life, when it shocks us, when it gives you a lot of anxiety, and then immediately you understand there are some higher things in this world, higher than money, success, everything. So that's the real immediate benefit of reading these books. Not to tell everyone you should not stop before you reach samadhi. No. That's why we read the works and teachings of great spiritual teachers. Not that immediately we are going to become Christ or Buddha. No. We should not think that either I should become Buddha or Christ or I would become an atheist. No. That should not be. We can strike a balance between the two. Reading of these great works can give some higher dimension, higher possibilities of our inner life, some sublime spiritual possibilities that goes beyond just a physical or mental. That's a real purpose. For example, Yama Niyama, just take for example. Yama Niyama. You need money, you need wealth, everything. But greed and covetousness may not be very helpful. Because greed makes you perpetually unhappy and discontented. Covetousness also. So that's the real purpose of these great teachings. It gives you a very balanced, very wholesome, holistic concept of life as a whole. And the second one, actually it is an only example. It's only example, you know. So, a spiritual seeker who has reached the highest state of a pratyahara, when his mind is completely withdrawn from sense objects and sense organs are no more connecting with the sense objects, he can see the reality within. The state of a high, he's a great yogi. So he may be watching things, but he may not be discontent. The way he looks may be like a pelican concentrating on this. But actually he's concentrating not on something external, but something internal. That idea is kept, is presented in the form of this imagery. That's a picture. That's idea. Illustration.
Thank you.
Swamiji, I had a question about, I understand this idea of pratyahara, of the yogi withdrawing the senses. What about a sort of meditation practices, say like a great musician or a great painter or something like that, that's focused on the external, but they're trying to meditate that way? I just was curious if you have any thoughts about that.
Great musicians, great painters, great scientists, at least names. I mean, they reach some very high levels of pratyahara, no doubt. But, you know, pratyahara should give us a feeling of inner contentment and harmony and peace. So that may not always happen to all great geniuses who may spend long hours, a lot of energy on their chosen profession, music or painting. But there have been great men and women who, of course, identified themselves with a great ideal, different areas like music or painting and so on. But one important criterion is, does it give you kind of inner fulfillment or harmony? Inner fulfillment, blissfulness, inner completeness. That's what makes a difference between a spiritual seeker trying to practice pratyahara and great men and women who achieve great things through intense concentration in their chosen profession. Of course, there have been great musicians who could transform their musical training or musical practice into spiritual sadhanas. There are no doubts. In their case, you know, you can find the same happiness and blissfulness. So that's there. So there's a great musician in India, Tyagaraja. So one of his greatest musical composition is this, you know. So he was a great musician, and he was invited by a king, a famous king, to his court to play there. But he said, I will sing only to please the Lord. So you are offering me this great treasure, wealth. Is that going to give me eternal peace? So I shall sing only to please the Lord and not to please a king. And the king actually respected him, honored him for rejecting his offer, his invitation. So you can see the greatness of such people. You find many such great musicians in the Middle Ages or later years, among the composers of great psalms. Some of these great musical compositions, they sing during the Christmas carol here. So you find great men and women who have achieved great things, who transformed their music into a spiritual practice, a tool, an instrument, to connect with God. So it happens.
I guess what I was trying to get at maybe is, can you use the senses? I mean, it seems like, so the pratyahara is drawing the senses towards the mind and the mind towards Atman, but using the senses themselves as a form of meditation. Maybe I'm thinking of like the Buddhist using, you know, sound or sort of mindfulness of the senses as a form of meditation. Maybe that's what I guess I was trying to get at with the idea of the musician or the painter. I don't know if you would respond the same way with the answer or any other thoughts about that.
Yeah. You know, these are different ways of detaching our mind from distracting vrittis, vasanas, samskaras and memories from the sensory world. So there are different methods, different traditions. They have developed these tools to practice this ideal of detachment, okay. non-attachment, detaching themselves from distractions, which may be in the form of vrittis, vasanas, samskara, desires, memories. As you know, prakasha avaranam. Avarana means the concealment, the veil that conceals the light of chitta, the light of knowledge. So the different tools have been developed in different traditions. I shall give one more, complete this, you know. Suppose a great music becomes an object of concentration. That concentration, when you concentrate on the music, great music, it helps you to turn your mind from every other distraction. Right. The mind is completely focused on that music. Right. Or maybe om, it may be chanting great mantra, different tradition, great song, prayer, whatever may be. So when the mind is drawn away from all other distractions and is completely focused on the particular mantra or psalm or prayer, whatever it is, then it is only one step to the higher level of concentration. That's the idea behind. Okay. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om. That's it. Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. So we'll have an announcement. We will not have class next Friday, April the 8th. So the next class will be on Friday, April 15th at 7:30 p.m. So please remember, there will be no class next Friday, April the 8th. So the next class will be on Friday, April the 15th at 7:30 p.m. Thank you.